The author argues that globalization must be understood not as the transference of culture from one site to another, but as a complex set of interactions where traditional center-periphery power relationships are replaced with more cooperative lateral, or as he says, flat arrangements. And it's a little bit about Dr. Friedman. He conceptualizes as globalization is going to be roughly three phases. 1.0 basically encompasses the period of Western colonial expansion. 2.0, which is basically 20th century, comes the multinational corporations and hegemonic Western cultural influence. And then 3.0, which he argues we are in now, interaction and integration between different parts of the world, collaboration and disruption of center-periphery relationships made possible through digital networks. Here's what Friedman says about 3.0, I quote, several technological and political forces have converged, and that has produced a global web-enabled playing field that allows for multiple forms of collaboration without regard to geography or distance, or soon, even language. Interaction within and among jazz communities, of course, involves not just musicians, but also fans, critics, scholars, and others who share a passion for the music. The term jazz community itself is problematic, a topic I have addressed elsewhere and don't have time to go into here in depth, but very quickly, I would contend that there is no such thing as a single jazz community in the way that the term is generally used in jazz studies. There are certainly localized communities, or those whose members share a common interest, such as those of us in this room. For purposes of this paper, I'm not generally concerned with the technical processes of online communication and collaboration. We obviously have heard about those already. What interests me are the ways in which the virtual community in jazz is beginning to emerge. I view virtual communities as an extension of Benedict Anderson's imagined communities, so-called because its members, and I quote, will never know most of their fellow members, meet them, or even hear of them, yet in the minds of each lives the image of their community, end quote. The jazz community, as is commonly invoked in jazz scholarship, is the ultimate imagined community. Everyone thinks they're a part of it, but no one really knows what it is. Returning to globalization, Nicholson refers to what he calls the globalization of jazz through recordings. Again, I contend that globalization through recordings is not really possible, as recordings themselves do not provide the sort of two-way, indeed multi-way, real-time communication that is an essential element of the new globalization. Recordings are artifacts of performance, as Ingrid Monson and others have argued. They are not performances themselves. Dialogue with the recording will only have a finite amount of responses. Lester Young will not change what he plays when you shift meter or key when you're playing with him. This follows the classic line of thinking about globalization in jazz, which emphasizes the spread and adaptation of jazz around the world through recordings and performances by jazz musicians. Such local and transnational forms have been the focus of much recent study by authors like Taylor Atkins and Paul Austerlitz. And these are, of course, important to our understanding of jazz, but they are only part of the story of globalization. Such forms do not, in my view, represent a truly global understanding that is emerging from jazz. Regular, sustained interaction between jazz musicians, critics, fans, and others around the world is what will define globalization in this musical. There is an enormous amount of information about jazz on the internet. A Google search on the term jazz just this morning yielded 229 million hits, which I will not have time to go into in detail. And while there are certainly not this many jazz sites on the internet, even a small fraction of this would yield a substantial number. We cannot possibly undertake a meaningful analysis of this many sites. I would like to present what I call a surface-scratching overview of some of the ways in which individuals who share an interest in jazz interact using digital networks. And there are several major online formats where virtual community building in jazz has the greatest potential. And I'd like to isolate three: message boards, blogs, and social networking sites. Sites such as these serve to connect individuals with an interest in jazz from theoretically anywhere in the world. And just a little bit, breaking down the Google search, if you search for jazz message boards, you get 2.7 million hits. About 6 million hits for jazz and MySpace, which I'll be talking about in a moment, and almost 46 million hits for jazz and blog. Of course, you know, some of these talk about the Utah jazz and what other uses of the term jazz, but we'll figure those out. Message boards afford users an opportunity to discuss and perhaps frequently debate topics related to the music in ways that a few decades ago might have happened only in local clubs or living rooms or in the pages of magazines or journals. The latter, of course, primarily are local phenomena, but the message board is global, unrestricted, either by physical space or publication schedule. On the message board of the website allaboutjazz.com, topics range from discussions of specific musicians to current controversies in the music, you can always find a thread about Wynton Marsalis, to advice for young musicians and nearly everything else in between. While member profiles indicate the majority of the over 12,000 current registered members from the U.S. and Canada, A browse through member profiles reveals users from Denmark, UK, France, Australia, Turkey, Argentina, Belgium, Sweden, and South Korea, just to name a few. Self-identifying descriptions of users range from professional musician to high school stage band member. In such a place, users who see themselves as part of the larger jazz community can come together and interact in ways the traditional understanding of jazz community tended to ignore. And while All About Jazz is one of the largest forums, there are dozens more that are active in many languages. Okay, here's a, this is a screenshot of the front page for allaboutjazz.com, and you can see some of the different categories. I didn't notice this thing about blindness among Viagra users. They get spammed too, apparently. Although, given the comments, the introductory comments, that might be of interest. Here in the general music discussion, you see some of the topics: Miles Davis, studio box sets, talking about Les Paul, who sings Gershwin best, and you know, this is a list that just goes on and on and on and on with a thousand different topics. Here's the inevitable somebody griping about Wynton Marsalis, which you see on pretty much every site that gets around to that at some point. And this is another commonly used, I'm sorry, the end of its cutoff, this is jazzreview.com, another lesser used method to work, but still pretty, you know, you see 651 topics, 121 topics, lots of messages, people use these sites a lot. Over the last decade, weblogs, better known as blogs, have provided a new and easily accessible forum for individuals to express views about numerous topics from politics to popular culture. Blogs devoted to jazz have also experienced enormous growth over the past several years, covering a wide array of topics, from those that focus specifically on an individual musician or jazz style, to others whose scope is more comprehensive. They all have in common, however, is a generally personal experience in jazz that is often missing in conventional criticism and biography. Blogs are, first and foremost, an expression of individual views on a given topic, or acceptance of this, which we'll talk about in a moment. Authors' opinions are rarely couched in academic or critical objectivity. There is a thing. There is nothing remarkable, of course, about fans and musicians expressing opinions about jazz. However, blogging provides an opportunity that heretofore did not exist in practical terms to make an individual's voice heard or seen. Anywhere in the world that has a computer and an internet connection, a brief survey of blogs devoted to jazz shows a wide array of activity, from local musicians promoting their own music to would-be critics commenting on live shows, to those devoted to discussions of particular artists. Say, here's a blog that comes from the UK, John Harris, a guitarist, talking about what he has seen in local jazz scene, talking about guitars. Really important calendar of upcoming shows, so anybody who goes to the site knows where to see him. This is a weblog entitled Jazz in India, talking about jazz in India. As you can see down here, it's not quite as active, only 11 entries. The next one is a tribute site to Miles Davis. You see these all around, people putting up tribute sites, they're giving their views on particular musicians, often embedding sound clips, get copyright issues, of course, but we'll deal with that another time. And then this last one is very interesting. This is the official blog of the Blue Note Club in New York, which is really fascinating because they are providing interviews and conversations with people who are playing at the club along with publicity for the club. Think of this as sort of being an online extension of what is going on at the Blue Note. Social networking sites provide yet another avenue of connection for this virtual jazz community. Sites such as MySpace provide not only contact between individuals, but are useful in creating a real web of connectivity. With respect to musicians themselves, some artists have created their own MySpace pages. Here we see the one for Joe Lovano. And again, this is just a screenshot at the very top of the page, but if you were to scroll down, you would see shows, you could see Joe posting various, posting like, there's an embedded blog, so you can post on various topics. Other sites created by fans, or in some cases by interested parties devoted to carrying on the legacy of certain players. Like trumpeter Woody Shaw's MySpace site, for example, was created by his son, Woody Free, who's now a graduate student at Indiana University in Bloomington, who also maintains the ESA's official website. So Woody Free has created this site, again, that is some sound clips talking about his father's legacy, and so forth. MySpace sites and other social networking sites allow artists to communicate directly with their fans via embedded blogs, and perhaps more importantly, their lists of friends. This is, of course, the hallmark of social networking, the idea that you can see not only the artist that you are interested in, but you can see who else is interested in that artist as well. Here's a screenshot that I took from John Schofield's official, or official MySpace site, and some of his friends that are listed. So we have all the way from Modesty Martin Wood to Susan, who is apparently some kind of Rottweiler. You see these people have the ability to sort of choose their own pictures and their own identities. Friends can also leave comments for the webpage owners. I know it's a little dark, can't see this, but here are some, just a few comments that people leave other registered MySpace users. You see the first one says, thanks for add, meaning thanks for adding him to his list of friends. The other one from Panos and Greece, and this is actually a good point to interject, that one of the biggest barriers, of course, to the globalization of these types of sites is the fact that the vast majority of them are in English. Greetings from Greece, Mr. Schofield, thank you that you add, and so on. The vast majority of these sites are in English, does provide some problem. Then you see Roy Orbison, who I kind of doubt that's actually Roy Orbison who posted this on 2nd September 2007. All of this says nothing about performance, but even in this area, the potential for interaction exists. Online performance over digital networks has the ability to create new performance spaces in which musicians from around the globe can begin to more easily interact, again, as we heard before. There are, of course, some steps in this direction that are already occurring. Many venues now provide streaming broadcasts of their performances in real time, allowing users around the world to experience their music, not in person, then at least in the same time as a physical audience. These types of webcasts are, of course, not interactive, but are still an important development in connecting artists and global audiences. Pedagogical programs such as Smart Music allow students and teachers to interact over large distances. Students can design lessons for their students who can then upload their performances to for later evaluation. And although practical applications might still be years off, nearly synchronous internet performances are theoretically at least certainly possible. In fact, a panel at the 2004 National Association of Schools of Music Conference reported on experiments with such settings with promising results, indicating that signal delays were not significantly more than those experienced by musicians standing at a certain distance on stage. As technologies and digital networks improve, we might expect that such long-distance collaborations will be more common. Thus, we can envision someday, at least, when a musician in Ontario can log onto a network and play with musicians in New Jersey or the Jersey Islands or perhaps Japan. At this point, we approach the type of globalization that Friedman refers to as 3.0, moving beyond influence and adaptation into the realm of the truly collaborative relationship. It doesn't take much of a stretch to think of where this could be going. Instant communication around the world, access to similar pedagogical tools and repertories, and a more multilateral flow of musical information have the potential to radically alter the ways in which jazz musicians interact as a global community. With access to the same types of recordings, technologies, and performance environments, we might see the development of a truly global jazz community, one in which no one national tradition or identity is a dominant musical or cultural force. Now, does this mean that the future of jazz will involve musicians sitting down for hours at a time, participating in chat sessions, or blogging, or playing over digital networks, perhaps, and in fact, some already do? But of course, musicians themselves are only part of the history of this music. The internet has become and will continue to be an important element of interaction among musicians, critics, fans, scholars, and so forth, whether used for publicity in the form of personal websites or to create new performance venues. And with sincere apologies to Sunbrock, you probably know where this is going. Cyberspace is the place. Thank you.